Picture a job ad that has 10 criteria. One person meets 6 of them and goes for it. Another person meets 9 out of 10 criteria, but believes they're not qualified enough to even apply. Which of these do you think is a woman? That's what researchers call the confidence gap. But a new study has shaken things up. It's found the first group of girls in the world who are just as confident as their male counterparts, and they're Australian. So what would it take to bridge the confidence gap between boys and girls? Is it about skilling up our girls in the art of self-belief? Or is it something that both sexes can develop together? Our Facebook page has a very busy discussion that you can join. With us today are Terry Fitzsimmons. He's a senior lecturer in leadership and managing director of the Australian Gender Equality Council. And Dr. Miriam Yates is a psychologist and a research fellow at the Australian Gender Equality Council. And they're both in the University of Queensland Business School. Welcome to Life Matters, Terry and Miriam.
Hi.
Hello.
Miriam, let's start with you. Confidence could mean quite different things to different people. How did you define it when you were doing this research?
So in academic terms, confidence is about a combination of self-esteem and self-efficacy. So when we talk about self-esteem, it's that subjective belief that one has about their own self-worth, whereas self-efficacy is a subjective belief that we each hold regarding the extent to which we believe we can achieve things and do things that we set our minds to. So in this piece of research, we talk about social self-efficacy and general self-efficacy. And social self-efficacy is about the beliefs that we hold about our own abilities to initiate new relationships, persist in uncomfortable social situations, or work with others. Whereas general self-efficacy rather describes our belief in our own ability to set goals and objectives and achieve these, and essentially show up in difficult situations.
So it sounds like confidence is quite complicated. You need all these different things to be a confident person.
Yes, in some ways, yes, certainly. But we've tried to distill it in a simple-to-test kind of construct that's used in a lot of research in both psychology and business. And we've tried to distill it into more of a simple relationship with it that we're looking at with these boys and girls.
And Terry, what is the confidence gap?
Well, it seems to appear at about age 9, and it continues right through to age 80, and there have been literally dozens and dozens of studies done around the world into this confidence gap. And it was actually only recently, about 3 or 4 years ago, that a researcher put all of those studies together in a graph to show this disparity and the fact that that confidence does diverge from about age 9 quite dramatically and quite rapidly into adolescence, and that gap stays right through to even after retirement. So we don't get back to parity until age 80.
And what's going on there? Do we just outnumber the men at that point?
I'm not entirely sure what's going on at age 80. It's probably more to do with certainly in that generation, the vast majority of 80-year-olds, the men would have been working and the women probably weren't. And so that retirement, it's probably about the fact that they don't feel a sense of self-worth perhaps that they might have felt in the workplace. They may feel that they're not contributing as much as they used to. So, but our study was certainly at the other end of the spectrum.
And Miriam, is there any evidence that biology contributes to this lifelong gap?
Great question. So that's actually comes from the gender essentialist literature. And there's a lot of contention within this literature. And effectively what these people that believe in this argue is that there's biological differences which contribute to a whole range of gender disparities that we certainly see in the workplace. And I guess one of the kind of big ticket arguments that they have in this particular literature looks at the role of testosterone and how that impacts on certain behaviours. Which could include, for example, competition as being a key kind of behaviour where testosterone might influence different behaviours for boys and girls. But there is, like I mentioned, quite a bit of contention around this idea, and there's certainly a range of different arguments posed for why we might see some of the effects that people report on the basis of testosterone differences. So for your listeners, I would certainly recommend having a look at some of Cordelia Fine's work. She does a lot of work in this space in terms of synthesising the existing research and posing some alternative explanations. And she actually has a book called Testosterone Rex, which does an excellent summary of looking at those competing arguments within that space.
And Terry, there's a lot of discussion on our Facebook page at the moment and people arguing that lots of boys have problems with confidence too. How do we know for sure that this is gendered?
It's probably because of the range of studies that have been done. In fact, there was one study that was carried out across 48 different countries. And what was interesting about that study is while it did find that, generally speaking, boys are more confident than girls in absolutely every single one of those 48 countries, what they found is that that difference appeared at different ages and in different contexts. So what that tells us straight away is that there's something beyond gender going on here. But again, all of our research is around general effects across a population rather than individual effects. Of course, when you get down to the individual level, there are always going to be boys or girls that are less confident than others. So, but what we're looking at is a huge array of studies, and particularly that one where they've taken that into 48 different locations and found the same effect. So we're pretty confident, to use that word, that, you know, the effect's there, and it's certainly across the globe.
We do hear, though, a lot lately about girls outperforming boys academically. So is the confidence gap having actual effects on girls' educational and work successes?
It certainly is, and it's, as Miriam said, it's quite complicated, and we know, and it's academic outcomes. Girls have been outperforming boys for decades, you know, and again, if you look at our university graduates, there are, I think it's 8% more female graduates than men. So it's, I don't think it's about academic performance at all. I think there's other things going on both in the workplace and perhaps in co-ed environments that are causing a confidence gap, which isn't related necessarily to academic ability. In fact, I would say it's not.
And Miriam, do you have examples of what this struggle with confidence would look like later down the line, say in a workplace?
Yeah, certainly. So in the workplace, it could look like individuals being less likely to speak up, even though they might have a really great idea that they know is going to be a success once it lands in the room. They might shy away from challenging situations, or they might not set stretch goals or objectives where they feel they potentially might be unable to achieve those. So a prime example of situations in which we might see lacking confidence play out, particularly for women, could be in performance appraisals, promotional contexts, and certainly at the bonus allocation time at end of financial year.
And Miriam, say a woman did develop confidence to the same level as her male counterparts, is she going to be viewed the same way as them?
Interesting question. So this actually taps really nicely into my pet area of research interest. And so when we talk about confidence in the research more broadly, we actually look at certain behaviours, for example, assertiveness as indicators or markers of confidence. And what the research repeatedly shows in this space is that women who are perceived as being overly assertive or too assertive actually they receive a bunch of, unintended outcomes, which are quite negative. So that can range from reduced or more negative performance and promotional kind of attributions, but certainly interpersonal consequences. So experiencing reduced, if you will, likability. So they get rated more poorly on interpersonal dimensions as well.
You get the boring Kris Kringle at Christmas time, don't you? We're chatting with Terry Fitzsimmons, who's a Senior Lecturer in Leadership and Managing Director at the Australian Gender Equality Council, and Dr. Miriam Yates, who's a psychologist and a research fellow at the Australian Gender Equality Council. And they're both in the University of Queensland Business School. And we're wondering what it would take to bridge the confidence gap between boys and girls. Is it about helping girls have more self-belief and self-efficacy, or is it about managing both sexes so that they can develop together and be effective in the workplace? Our Facebook page is rife with discussion on this at the moment. You can join in. Let's look in greater detail at the study. Miriam, how did you find these amazing girls?
Great question. So originally what we wanted to set about doing, so we actually work at the UQ Business School, and so we're fundamentally interested in looking at people in the workplace, essentially. And what we set out to do was actually start to explore some of those precursors that might result in what we currently see in women in leadership, which is a underrepresentation of women, particularly in the C-suite and CEO roles. And so in asking that question of, well, what might be going on that informs what we see in the workplace, we started to question this idea of, well, where are women CEOs coming from? And once we start to ask that question, it points towards some different types of schooling environments in which we might find these particular women as they enter the workforce and so on and so forth. And essentially what we find is that a lot of these CEOs that we see see. And certainly these more senior women come from schools in which there is, I guess, a focus on performance, so particularly high matriculating schools. And so what we wanted to do is approach some of these high matriculating schools in Southeast Queensland and Queensland more broadly. And it just so happened to be the case that these schools were single-sex schools and they were within the Southeast Queensland region. So we certainly didn't set about to look at the single-sex environment. It just ended up being an outcome of our focus on looking at the antecedent qualities of high-performing and senior women in business.
And Miriam, how do you know it's because they're in a girls' school compared to, say, being in a Brisbane school or a top-performing school?
Brilliant question. That's one of our ongoing questions that we have regarding this data and the current findings that we've seen evidence within the data set. So what we're looking to do at this point in time is explore and expand that question. We certainly don't know whether that is a factor of single-sex school environments. All we have found is that this is one particular context in which we don't see a confidence gap between boys and girls.
And Terry, what is going on here? Why are these particular girls more confident? Can you spot the reasons that have brought them into being?
Well, because we didn't set out to look at a single-sex environment, as Miriam was just saying, when the data came in, we were looking for, well, what could be the reasons for this effect, given that it's the first that's been found? And we had to go back to the literature and look at, you know, previous confidence research where researchers hypothesise what might be going on in different particular environments, and especially that study that was done in the 48 different countries that was saying, well, there are some contexts that can produce different confidence outcomes. And so we weren't just looking at the confidence gap, we were also looking at what contributes to confidence. So we found that there were three particularly strong effects. One was participation in team sports. One was participation in leadership roles, but also leadership development activities. And the other one was travel, but local travel rather than international travel. So there's some clues there about what the effects are in terms of what generates self-confidence. But also the literature was pointing to the fact that if you get differences in activities between boys and girls, you know, in terms of what they participate in, then, and not only what they participate in, but what they see when they look out into the world, it can produce different outcomes. So we thought, okay, well, what's going on in a single-sex environment? And it turns out that a lot of the factors that given in the literature about what might cause a gap aren't present, or certainly present in a lot less degree, in a single-sex environment, especially for the girls. So just as an example, there's been some great research done in Australia about team sport and the fact that girls tend to drop out of team sport earlier than boys do. And when you look at the reasons that are given when they go in and ask the girls why they're reluctant to participate in team sports as they get older, it turns out there's a lot of issues around self and identity, and the fact that the boys are watching and they're a little bit concerned about the changes that are going on, and it's just a lot easier not to be in public and not showing those changes and participating in sports, so they tend to drop out a bit earlier. But in a single-sex girls' school environment, that's not a factor. And the other two, when it comes to leadership, in the single-sex girls' schools, particularly the nine schools that we looked at, all of the senior leadership roles are held by women. So the principal, deputy principals, the heads of the different faculties, even the registrars are all women. So the girls are looking up and seeing strong female role models. Not only that, all of the leadership roles within the schools, so, you know, prefects, heads of the music team, the sporting teams, all of those different things are held by young women as well. So all of the role modelling that's going on and all of the leadership they can see presents this picture that it's all women. The couple of the other things that we know create problems is stereotypes and stereotyping and what girls are good at, inverted commas, and what boys are good at. Whereas in the single-sex environment, certainly in the schools that we looked at, the top nine girls' schools, this idea of stereotyping just isn't there. The teachers, the principals of these schools are pushing that girls literally can do anything and are as capable, if not more capable, than the boys. So the messaging around the stereotypes, especially around STEM and STEM careers, the things that they might be seeing on TV or might be hearing in the mainstream media aren't present in the school as well.
It's very hard to see how they could be a completely patriarchy-free zone, but it is encouraging to hear that there's great role modelling going on there. I'm wondering, though, people might assume that this is about being in an affluent school, or, you know, families up the more affluent end of the spectrum are going to send their kids to these top-performing schools. Is this research relevant to other people whose kids might be in government schools as well?
Definitely. So there are two things. One is that the origins of the study came out of previous studies into why there are so few female CEOs. And at the time the research was done, there were only 45 female CEOs of ASX firms altogether. And when you look at which schools that they went to, it was a mix actually of co-ed and single-sex, public, private. There didn't seem to be anything that predicted an outcome other than these schools had good outcomes. So I think it's important for us not to draw absolute conclusions from this particular study. What we need to do is more to have a look at, is there an effect around wealth? You know, so is it to do with high socioeconomic schools? I don't think it is. I think you would find that confidence, certainly in terms of comparisons between boys and girls, isn't going to be necessarily affected by the high socioeconomic demographic that we surveyed here. And in terms of co-ed versus single sex, we really do need to have a look at what's going on in Australia in our co-ed schools before we can draw absolute conclusions about, you know, should we change our schooling system, for instance.
Well, and the factors you talked about as being most important, exclusion from team sports, relationship distractions, role modelling in leadership. Is it possible for teachers and school principals to achieve change in those areas within the current state school system?
I think there'd have to be a complete rethink about the way in which classes were occupied, you know, by boys or girls. You know, to what degree do they collaborate with one another? So, I mean, the answer, like most things, usually lays somewhere in the middle. It may not be completely co-ed in terms of everything that goes on in a school. It might be single-sex classroom versus co-ed playground. I don't know. We don't know. We need to do a lot more to check this out. But as Miriam said before, it's interesting that we do have an environment here where we can show with 10,000 kids that there is a particular environment in which the confidence issue is not an issue.
And Miriam, is there anything that comes from your research that could be something that parents could latch onto as a model for what they might be able to achieve outside the school system at home to build on their girls' confidence from a young age?
So one of my, I guess, favourite kind of domains in which we found some really interesting results looks at the chores assigned to boys and girls. So we actually asked students to tell us about the types of chores that they kind of get assigned by mum and dad or they do at home. And it was really fascinating actually going through that data, you know, with such a huge sample, like Terry said, over 10,000 responses. And it was fascinating looking at the different types of chores that boys and girls talk about. So things like washing the car or, you know, vacuuming the house or filling the dishwasher or looking after the dog or feeding the dog or caring for their little siblings. And it was fascinating because what we actually did do is go through that data and code for greater than 50% of chores inside the home and greater than 50% of chores outside of the home. And what we see is a really clear indicator that boys are doing substantially more chores outside of the home versus girls who are concentrated on chores inside the home. So really kind of mirroring those gendered kind of distribution of work that we see in often adult relationships. And so what I would be certainly advocating for and certainly having parents reconsider or people reconsider is how we're assigning those chores inside the home and how we're reimbursing those chores. You know, we know from broader research that's come out of other research institutions that looks at the pocket money that we give to boys and girls. And what we find is that the pocket money gap, if you will, between boys and girls mirrors that of the gender pay gap in the real world.
Interesting.
Yep. So how are we signing those chores? How are we reimbursing those chores? And what are we telling our kids about the value of their work inside and outside the home?
Okay. So from now on, my 7-year-old will be feeding the cat and I will be taking the garbage bins out. Thank you both so much for coming on today. I'm sure there'll be much more discussion about this on our Facebook page. Terry and Miriam, we're very grateful for your time.
Thank you very much.
Terry Fitzsimmons is a Senior Lecturer in Leadership and Managing Director of the Australian Gender Equality Council. Dr. Miriam Yates is a Psychologist and Research Fellow at the Australian Gender Equality Council, and they're both at the University of Queensland Business School.